Welcome to Cutthroat Kvetchen, the podcast where sabotage isn't just talked about, it's up for debate. I'm William Hughes, a real turkey, and I'm joined, as always, by the official culinary ambassador to podcasting, Gary Butterfield.
Hello, and I'm with the Bob of podcasting, Will Hughes.
That's me, Gary, although, of course, the Bobs aren't in this episode that we're talking about from the Food Network TV show Cutthroat Kitchen, because they're not introduced till like season 8 or something.
It's weird that they got grown.
Yeah, well, you know, vats take a long time. Gary, yeah,
they had to hit a recruit.
We finally pivoted. The pivot.
Here's the thing about Monster Blitz. It was going way too fucking fast.
It was going so fucking fast, dude.
We couldn't keep up with it, so we decided not to.
Yeah. The rest of the monsters all move around and fire a shot.
Yeah, some of them go right at you. There you go.
There you fucking enjoy. Go. Enjoy there your you go, slop, pigs.
Yeah.
That's interesting. They're jackals to you, but pigs to me. That's interesting.
Mm. Yeah. If only some kind of hybrid-like creature. Will, for people who don't know, because as veterans of everything to Guppy, we're used to people doing vicarious experiences. What is Cutthroat Kitchen?
Yeah. So, well, first of all, what's Cutthroat Kvetchen? Cutthroat Kvetchen is a podcast where we go through all, episode by episode, do a recap of all 189 episodes of the Food Network reality competition prank game theory simulator Cutthroat Kitchen.
Yes, it's a TV coverage blitz.
Yeah.
Where we do per episode.
Yeah, we're going up straight up against Best Call the Vacuum Man.
Pod Save the Vacuum Man.
Sure. You got Levi on the brain, man.
Yeah. 16 seasons.
And Jen.
Jen's great. 16 seasons. That's so many seasons of this thing.
Yeah. So Cutthroat Kitchen is a TV show that ran from 2013 to 2017, which barely in the real world has 16 seasons in that amount of time.
Yes. That is and they're long seasons. They're not short seasons.
Yeah, they shorten up at the end. They're down to like 10 episodes by the end. But for most of the run, it's like 13, 14 episodes per season.
Yeah. So it starts kind of real. And this is what this means to us. You talked about all the things that it is. I think the reason why you and I both love this show is the strategy. We're going to explain it as we go through, and I think we should just kind of do it as we go through the episode, rather than giving a base, just because the rules are introduced in the episode as well. We're talking about the first episode, of course.
Yep.
But yeah, this is in the long tradition of pretty watchable Food Network game shows, you know, that have an element of dumb that I like. Dumb strategy to it.
Yeah, this is easily the best one, though. So, like, this show, I actually spent some time this week, like, looking up, like, the origins of the show. I find it fascinating that it debuted within 2 months of Guy's Grocery Games, which is inferior in pretty much every respect, I think.
You get to see more Guy Fieri, like, really amuse himself.
Yes.
It is a less non-ironic. It's harder to enjoy unironically.
As someone whose Alton Brown side of his soul is much, much, much stronger than his Guy Fieri side of his soul, it's hard for me to line up with Guy's Grocery Games a lot of the time.
We both have. That's a good split. I think that you can probably, that's an alignment system that I can get on board with, the Guy Fieri, Alton Brown, because they're pretty opposite. You know, do you think, I've never seen them together. Do you think they get along? Like, if you're on Food Network, you have to have people you fucking hate.
I assume Alton can't. So I actually, one of the things I did while I was researching for this this debut episode was Google, is Alton Brown a dick?
Yeah.
And the answer is kinda. Like, I will note that if you're, like, really worried about the politics of Alton Brown, he is a Republican, but he does hate Trump, and he is a Christian, but he did reportedly leave his church because they were shitty about gay people. So
he's right on the line.
Yeah.
You know, any other era, he would be awful.
Yeah.
But right now, by comparison, pretty good.
And then most of, like, the personal anecdote, this is all anecdotal, but it was like, yeah, he's kind of a dick. He's, like, kind of like an arrogant dick who usually thinks he's the smartest person in the room and doesn't suffer fools gladly. Which, whatever, that's what I want Alton Brown to be.
That's what I want him to be as a host, for sure. It's super fun. I like the idea of hanging out with people, you know, and I don't think I'd want to hang out with him. I've read a lot of accounts of him telling people, staff, not to look at him. Like, don't make eye contact.
Yeah.
That's hard. Hard for me. Whereas I feel like, I don't know. I want to be able to, I project myself. I'm on Cutthroat Kitchen, you know, and I want to get yelled at by one person in particular. We'll find out later. But I don't want to be, after the cameras go down, I want Alton Brown to be like, all right, man, that's pretty good. And maybe like, thanks, buddy.
You know, sometimes I'll say
that blueberry lady from the show.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Or the food scientist. You always had kind of the food historian. You always had kind of a vibe with
them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And it sucks because it's won't they. I've seen your wife. You guys have a YouTube channel. She seems like she'd be cool. You know?
Yeah. I didn't even think about slotting this into the Gary Butterfield dad quest.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. This is a big one.
No, you don't want Alton to be your dad, man. From what I've read, you do not want Alton Brown to be your dad.
Guy Fieri.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Who I have feelings about that aren't entirely positive, but as a father figure, get the fuck out of here.
Yeah.
You know? You could hardly do better. How cool would that be? Cruising down Route 66? You know?
Sure. Gary, where does Route 66 go?
Through Texas.
Okay.
I think.
Yeah. I'm not going to fact check that. I don't know.
It sounds right. This is the best of these. I also have some affection for Chopped, largely because when somebody forgets an ingredient, I've never seen anybody act like they've like offended the emperor more.
Uh-huh.
And the judges take it really seriously. Like they're just like, well, you forgot the fennel. And they treat it like it's a moral failing in a really intense way. It is a weirder, meaner show, but less often than this.
Yeah. This kind of builds. So if you've never seen Chopped, the gimmick there is you have a basket of bad crap that you have to turn into good food.
Yes.
Or at least weird, non-suitable to each other.
Non-harmonious.
Yeah.
And unlike Cutthroat Kitchen, you don't want to hide it.
Yes.
Cutthroat Kitchen, when that happens to you, you're trying to hide your problems. And this one, you're trying to fix your problems.
But there is a certain prankishness to that show that it kind of carried forward from some of the harder episodes of Iron Chef, which Alton Brown was involved in the American version of. And then they take into Cutthroat Kitchen and kind of make the star of the show.
Yes. Well, let's get into it. We're going to talk about the game, this individual episode, the first one. You can watch this on Hulu, and we recommend you do.
Weirdly, some seasons are not on Hulu, I assume, because they cost $5 extra to license or something. But most of the show is on Hulu, except for the one episode you can't watch because one of the celebrity chefs was later accused of being a sex pest.
Yeah.
Which is a pain in the ass because it's in the middle of a tournament.
Yeah. That sucks. Who was it?
I don't remember. I don't think it was Mario Batali, but it was somebody.
Yeah. It was Luigi Batali.
Gary?
Viva la Sabotage, which I think is French for Life of the Sabotage.
It usually means long live, viva la, long live the sabotage.
Life of the Sabotage.
That's the literal
it's
translation.
It's been sabotaged.
Yes. This aired on August 11th, 2013. On this day in history, Jeff Bezos buys the Washington Post.
Yeah. Who, at the time, how could we tell that that was going to be so horrible?
I mean, everybody knew. Everyone said at the time.
But how much? How horrible?
I think everyone had it clocked.
It's pretty horrible. That guy.
And it was like, that guy who first transformed and then destroyed all of retail is now using his massive wealth to acquire one of the most venerable papers in America. This will go poorly. It might go poorly slowly, but it will go poorly.
I think we all knew it was going to go poorly. I don't think that I, at least, understood what kind of cultural cesspit we would be in now, and the media's contribution to that is more what I mean.
Okay.
How could you predict something in the form of a 2025 And there are tendrils all the way back to 2013, August 11th.
Mm-hmm. This exact day in history.
Yeah.
So
it's also, we're also recording this on Cyber Monday.
We are also recording this on Cyber Monday. Be sure to cyber as hard as you can, as much as you can.
Yeah. And in honor of Jeff Bezos, Will, don't use the bathroom during this recording.
Okay, I won't. I'll piss in a jar.
Piss in whatever you want, but it can't be a toilet.
That's a really powerful sentence, Gary, and I'm glad that was on the first episode of our new show.
Yeah, use your imagination. These always begin with Elton Brown explaining the game a little bit.
Yeah, they have like
for the audience.
Yeah, well, it's that's like a pre-canned intro.
Yes.
That varies a little bit over the seasons, but has certain common phrases that I always enjoy.
And I want to draw attention to something that doesn't get talked about very much with Cutthroat Kitchen, which is the music.
Mm-hmm.
This opening, real fun.
Yeah, you know, actually we're recorded by Alton's Brown. That's Alton's band. That's a lie.
Yeah, the Alton Brown's band.
Yeah.
It's his cousin Zach Brown has his own band as well.
The most notable sting, and it's probably in this episode, so you've probably already heard it about seven times, is the
and that's the sound of a butcher knife going whoosh.
Yeah, famous whip-based butcher knives.
So the game is everybody gets $25,000 on this cold hard case, cold hard cash, and they do three culinary challenges. And they spend their money bidding on sabotages to inflict on each other. And the two cool strategic parts of it are that element where you are hoarding your resources.
Mm-hmm.
The more you spend, the more likely you are to tank somebody else's chances. But you have least to spend later. And the more you spend, the less money you get as a prize.
Yeah,
of it.
That's
so
one of the coolest things.
You are incentivized to be stingy and to spend simultaneously. It is a game of interesting choices.
I think in the whole history of the show, there are only two people who made it through without spending any money.
And that's when that happens, that you feel good.
Yeah.
Vicariously. I was like, ah. Especially one of the guys is this like tiny Asian dude.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know who I'm talking about? That guy rocks.
Yeah.
Yeah. Love him. Yeah.
Because these sabotages, we'll talk about each of the ones in this episode individually, but these are not like trivial shit.
No. Even right out the gate. Like, I've seen this episode before. It's been a while since I've done a series rewatch.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And I was surprised by how intense some of the early ones are. They get sillier and more imaginative, but these suck.
Yeah. I think the round one ones are fairly benign. Round two has a sabotage that sends the person home that is one of the nastiest things I think they ever do in the whole show.
Yeah. And they started introducing the weird kind of curveball sabotages where something seems like it's going to be really bad and turns out not that bad at all.
Yeah.
Love it when that happens. So there's just a lot of like strategy in this.
Yeah. Part of what I love about this show is that you can be a really good chef and fuck yourself by being really bad at bidding in auctions.
Yes. Yeah. Or vice versa. Like there are mediocre chefs who I've definitely seen win who were just other people had worse luck.
Yeah, you know. Or are just really savvy bidders. Like there is strategy to there's strategy to working with sabotages. There is also just strategy to the actual art of bidding. Basically, what you're doing is trying to estimate which sabotages you can survive and thus save your money on, while also ideally bidding up the price to eat into your opponent's resources.
Further, you don't need to have the best dish. You just need to have not the worst dish.
It's an elimination game in the first two rounds. Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a strategy element that I don't see contestants deploy that often, which I wish they would, which is just making sure somebody's the worst.
Yeah. They do that a little bit more in the later seasons. I feel like as people who've like watched the show are on it, they're like, oh, we're piling on Chef Blank.
Yeah. They've got to go. Whereas early on, they really play up the reality TV thing of like revenge, you know, like just getting back at each other for things like little kids. And a lot of the pleasure comes from that. When I said luck, I meant the kind of sabotages they get. So you are very savvy at bidding them, but bidding on them, but you've chosen the ones that like the person just gets fucked with.
Yeah.
Which, like, it's bidding, again, and then also sabotage choice.
Yeah. So the episode always... the other thing is, if you are just a phenomenal chef, this show also demonstrates that there's not a fucking thing in the world that can stop you.
Yeah. It's thrilling to watch. It's less of a test of skill than an Iron Chef or Chopped initially. But when somebody overcomes, it is more impressive to me.
Yeah. Just watching someone be like, well, they took away all my pans, but I know how to get heat out of this, and I know exactly how this protein reacts to heat, so I'm fine.
Yep. I know I can use the microwave. I know you can use the anti-griddle.
I can use the salamander. God, I love the anti-griddle.
All of the I love the microwave, anti-griddle, and salamander. Like, I would play an RPG where you played as those three characters.
Oh, and you're fighting the ice cream machine?
Yeah. The ice cream machine would be the boss. You know,
with
and then
his
he
big
liquid nitrogen.
Ooh, yeah, and their big heavy blast chiller.
Yeah. The other thing is, to make up for all these good things we're talking about, we get a shadow good thing, which is this cooking reality show has some of the most obnoxious contestants I've ever seen.
Uh-huh.
I've watched a lot of cooking reality shows. It is my preferred, like, game show, rather, not like a season long. Mm-hmm. But a game show, that is my preferred cooking content. In this, you are introduced to four people, and you are every episode, and you're fucking lucky if you don't hate one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is my experience in it. You, for me, I pick the one I hate the least. Mm-hmm. To kind of, and that shifts throughout the episode. It is a roller coaster of personalities.
And they are all, because of like the basic vibe of the show, they are all being encouraged to be bad, right?
Yeah.
Whatever their dumb fucking idea of bad is.
Yeah, like wine aunt bad.
Yeah, you know, there's a lot of wine aunt bad.
Wine aunt bad. An easy to say word that sounds easier to say whenever you say it.
If you have any kind of non-Caucasian identity, you are encouraged to bring that up in some way, I find.
Really bring it up. And, yeah. They will, from time to time, Chop does this more often, but give you a beat appropriate to what they think your race is.
Sure.
As you're doing things,
mm-hmm.
Which is fun. Or as you introduce yourself, they kind of look at your race and they say, you know what? This person looks like a hip hop person. I'm not going to say it's based on their color. I just think they look kind of hip hop, and I'm going to play some hip hop under their intro.
Yeah. Bom, bom. It is not an unproblematic show in its editing choices.
Let's get into our guys.
Yeah. Just to be clear, there are four chefs. One will be eliminated in each of the first two rounds, and then the final round is two people going at each other.
Mm-hmm. Big time, but going at, like, fucking no holds barred.
Which usually makes the first round the most interesting, because you have all four people in there being psychopaths in their own way.
Yeah. Even though it does most often frustrate my bad strategy if somebody is doing, you know, dumb revenge strategy. Mm-hmm. But that's the mark of a good game, because I'm playing it at home.
Here. So let's meet our four chefs from this episode.
Yeah. Chef Frankie is our first guy. This guy, to me, is a Lyft driver.
Sure. Yeah, definitely that vibe.
He has the most Lyft driver energy of anyone I've ever seen. Like, not a bad Lyft driver, but one who's going to talk to you more than you want.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, maybe
garrulous.
Talking about his kids.
He's garrulous.
Yes. Too garrulous, but not offensive. Not garrulous, like, where he says something racist.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a kind of garrulous that Lyft drivers sometimes are. But he looks like a Lyft driver, and I don't know how else to explain it. Like, if you look at a picture of this guy, I'm like, oh, that guy does Lyft. That guy is coming to pick me up in his Sentra.
Yeah. Like, so he is the most established of any of these chefs. I did research on all these people for the mm-hmm. most important segment of the whole game, which we'll get to in a second. But he was on season two of Top Chef, where he got about halfway through the season.
Not bad.
And his big thing, first of all, he's older. I tend to root for older contestants because this is a show where experience tends to count.
Yeah.
But he does have a lot of, like, really weird animal idioms.
Yeah. Yeah, he does. He compares himself a lot to culinary versions of real life Pokemons and such.
Gary, you can't call animals real life Pokemons. We're trying to be smart on this one.
That's what they are, though. It's a, you know, like, anyway.
I don't like
it. We can talk about that in the future. But yeah, we'll table that for when we're not recording.
Okay.
I have things to say about that.
Yeah, he'd like to think he's a lion. Just remember, the lion doesn't lose sleep. I wrote this wrong. Over the feelings of sheep.
Yeah, kind of rhymes and also kind of fun from him to say that. Kind of a bigger dude. This is going to be, this whole show is a cavalcade of fairly unfortunate facial hair.
Yeah.
He's got the bottom chin, the horizontal bottom chin line, kind of, in kind of a general scruffness.
Yeah. The Akewood, a neck beard is not a replacement for a jawline or whatever. Or yes. That's Venture Brothers.
Yes. But it's true.
And then, of course, the most important question with all of these chefs is, I did look up if they're dead now.
Yeah, because some of them have to have died.
This was 12 years ago.
Yeah, people have lived and died in that span. You know,
some people have done both, which is sad.
That's what I mean. Yeah, yeah. Some children have done both.
Sorry, Jeff. Notes,
he's published, speaking of children, he's published a children's book about accepting yourself, saying, if I had a tail.
And then I have noted that it would be $7 to get the Kindle version to see if, like, his ultimate point is don't try to change your body, or if it's accept yourself for whatever you are.
Yeah. Yeah.
Because it's 2025, it could be fucking either.
Would it go to tail? Would I have to go to tail re-education camp?
Yeah.
Tail conversion therapy? Unclear. My feelings on Chef Frankie, neutral.
Okay.
Initially. A little annoying, but relatively neutral because I've been here before. I know how bad it can get.
Next up, we have Chef Lori. Chef Lori's crazy.
Yes. Chef Lori seems, real emotion sneaks into what Chef Lori says more often than you want it to.
There's a lot of stuff bleeding through Chef Lori's TV show persona.
She's working on a lot of personal stuff. And she also seems like she might hit you. Like that doesn't happen. I haven't seen somebody actually get like punched on Cutthroat Kitchen, but if anyone was going to do it, it might've been Chef Lori.
Yeah. She's got a line in her intro that's like, I'll stab you in the back, but then I'll give you a hug. Maybe even a kiss on the cheek. Who knows?
Yeah.
And then later she gives the craziest speech ever.
Yes. Later on I don't know what that means. Stab you in the back and give you a hug. She's just trying to say she's sweet.
Yeah.
She'll play. But that little kiss is suggestive and weird. And it has something I love where somebody just kind of keeps talking.
They keep going. You know? And the Cutthroat Kitchen people let it happen.
Yeah. They're just like, no, keep going. You get to decide when you stop talking. And they'll cut around it. But it doesn't feel like that way to them. It's great.
Is she dead now? No. She has like pivoted to wellness.
Okay. That seems strange, too, because she doesn't seem particularly, like, at peace to me.
She has a webpage where she teaches her three pillars for well-being. I deliberately didn't put down in the notes what they were because I wanted to see if I could remember. It's food, breath, and I don't remember the third one.
Probably Fortnite.
She is probably the one who I think is the least working out of these three. I don't think she's really working as a chef anymore.
Yeah, I believe it based on her performance here. She's fine. I have a bone to pick with Chef Olka.
Oh, good foreshadowing, Gary.
Yeah, for our new one. Do you have anything else about Chef Lori before we move on from Chef Lori?
No, we'll talk more about Chef Lori as the episode goes on because she makes it to the last round. So
Chef Olka starts a time-honored tradition of having a cool chef nickname.
Yeah. Which, to be fair, she was using before the show. She was a blogger.
Yes.
A blogger and food stylist who called herself the Little Chef Ninja.
Little Chef Ninja, which sounds like a bad children's book, but translated from another language. Like, that feels like a direct translated Ukrainian fable.
Yeah.
A little bit.
I just want to note for the record, I do not know exactly where in the world her family hails from, but it is not Japan.
No, she want to be ninja. Maybe she could be ninja. I want to be ninja, she says. During her thing, she pretends to chew on raw turkey during her intro. Mm-hmm. It also spoils that we're going to have turkey involved during this by showing that clip. But she's real, like, snotty during this, I feel like.
She's pretty bland, I find. But, yeah, there is a little bland. Bit of, like, a snotty vibe.
Whenever she had to kind of make a big, you know, like, Tabby, I'm a lioness in the den. Like, say her version of things like that. Always seemed really snotty. Fine, though. Because we're going to get to after this one. But this is really interesting.
Yeah.
I didn't know
is
this.
She dead now?
No. She's a voice actress.
Yeah. She was a food stylist and blogger, from what I could see. She stopped blogging in like 2016. And now she's got a fairly respectable IMDb. She's in Fallout 76 when they added characters to Fallout 76.
Mm-hmm.
She's the woman who wants to fuck the robots.
Mm.
And she is in, Gary, exciting for you, Magic the Gathering Arena.
It's crazy. I don't even know whether there are voices in that game.
Apparently there are.
I played that. I don't know what that would be. Maybe it's in the accessibility options, like the reads the cards.
No, she's a character. She's like some former planeswalker.
I don't know. Yeah, it's weird. I'll have to check that out. Interesting. You know, Chef Stark is our final guy, and you always get some guy who looks like he's, you know, in The Offspring or whatever.
Yeah, someone from like the punk chef contingent.
Yes, he has a mohawk. That's fine. This man's off-center vertical chin stripe
is really rough to look at, man.
Driving me fucking crazy. So, like, imagine the facial hair of you having a, you know, just a thin stripe of hair on your chin. You'd imagine you do that in the middle, you know, because what else are you going to do? What an insane choice to be like, no, like a centimeter off center.
Mm-hmm.
It has to be intentional. It's maddening.
Yeah. There's a certain class of like punk guy where you can tell that they've adopted punk aesthetics, because if they tried to look like a normal person, they'd be one of the uglier normal people.
Yeah. And we get evidence of that later.
Yeah.
Yeah. The he's got that kind of energy to him. Here's the twist. I was looking at his hair, really prepared not to like this guy.
Uh-huh.
This guy is my favorite of the guys. Just because he seems like he actually wants to take it seriously.
Yeah.
You know, he seems like a good cook. Like, as he's going through, he's like, I know how to make fucking French toast. You get the ingredients for it, you idiots. And I was like, yeah, man.
I highlighted my favorite line from him early on, which is there's a trash talk bit at the start of most episodes. Yes. And his is just looking at the other three and going, you guys don't look like you're very Mohawk friendly. Just like, oh, you're the Mohawk guy.
Have you, Will, do you think that, do I look Mohawk friendly?
Not now. You did it like a year ago.
Okay. What changed?
You lost like a million pounds and grew a math teacher mustache.
That is true. The math teacher mustache is really not very Mohawk friendly.
No.
Yeah. Even though
you look a lot more like a cop now.
Yeah, I know. It's really in though. A bunch of people are doing it, which I feel weird about.
Uh-huh.
But I've noticed a huge uptick in mustaches. Yeah. This guy, other than that, seems like a chef to me.
Yeah. Is he dead?
No, but he's confirmed.
No, sorry, Omo. I've got a cough all episode. I apologize. Gary, can you take one set? This is all in the episode. I'm just going to try to cough really hard and get it out.
Yeah. Ooh.
Mm-hmm. I tried to do it in a cadence.
It kind of sounded like some like Mario mounting Yoshi.
It was. Perfect. That's how I do it.
Oh, okay. That's how they got that sound effect.
Yeah. So he is alive. He's still doing chef stuff. Sadly, his website, Stark Raving Chef, is no longer up. Now he does a lot of things branded as Stark Naked, although I don't think he cooks naked.
Mm-mm. No.
But I also got on his Instagram and found his family Christmas photo, and it's fucking bonkers.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. So from left to right, we have what I presume to be a wife.
That's his wife. She also appears in a kitchen math noir video he did, where he still has the mohawk. He just has the mohawk down in this photo, I want to be clear.
Yeah.
But.
Yeah. For Christmas, it's formal.
Yeah.
She's in a robe. he has his mohawk down, but you do get to see that his face just kind of doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's not facing correctly. Wearing a shirt with a big three on it.
Yeah. Are these costumes? Are these costumes? It's hard to say.
So, well, one of them is definitely a costume.
Okay. Now I want to ask. So the third person in the photo is represented by an old person's head with angel wings coming out of the neck. Is this paying tribute to a dead relative?
It's either paying tribute to a dead relative or the NES game Zombie Nation.
Sure.
It has to be dead relative, though. This has to be an angel.
Yeah.
But with just heads, like wings on the side of the head.
Yeah.
Pretty great. It makes me think the family circus was like that. Then there's a reveal that they're in a forest of some kind.
Uh-huh.
They're in front of a tree. So they're just kind of in a space before this. And then to the right, you have a little kid dressed up in a little suit with a hat with $2 sign. Bowler hat. Looking real sly with $2 sign bags. He's just robbed something.
Yeah.
It can only be a costume.
But it is. This was listed, put up as their Christmas card for the year.
Yeah. It's very unclear what's going on here.
It's a really confusing photo. There was other stuff that was more related to his chef career on his Instagram, but this one really gave me pause.
It's like four inside jokes.
Yeah.
Next to each other. So who is, at this point, who's your favorite? Who are you rooting for?
I think I have to default to Chef Lori because I like the crazy one. It's hard for me because I already knew who won going in because I remember this episode. So it's easy to root for the winner, but Chef Lori has the best energy.
Yeah. It's definitely the most unpredictable energy.
Yeah.
The real feelings that you're caught when things happen are real fun.
I got to scroll the notes so I don't look at this kid's little, I just robbed a bank expression anymore.
Am I a stinker bank robber? Like
this kid's 13 in a suit and tie. With a little, God,
it's incredible.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a really, and he's standing away from his family.
Uh-huh. And like he's hunched a little bit holding his money bags.
Yeah, he's just come from the Christmas bank.
If the mom wasn't in a robe, it would really feel like Devin just hadn't taken off the Halloween costume yet. And they're like, all right, I guess we're doing this. With Devin in the bank robber costume.
Because Stark and Mom both look like something you could throw on when you first wake up on Christmas.
Morning. Yeah.
You know, but then he comes down as the Christmas burglar. Yeah. You know, he just comes down as the giftler.
Christmas Dillinger.
Yeah, Christmas Dillinger. Who's, got a... With his grandpa ghost who they solve crimes and cause crimes.
It's so good. So, yeah. It's really good. So, this... You kind of already... gave out your first, obviously every episode of Cutthroat Kvetchin, we give out the first impression rose.
Yeah. For me, yeah, it's Stark.
Yeah. All right. So Alton comes out, explains the game, hands out the prop cash, for insurance purposes, I'm told.
Early on, he doesn't encourage people to do things with it, but later it's going to become a very pleasing rhythm of him telling people to smell it, taste it. Like rub it all over their face, and people do gross things with this money.
Yeah, I was disappointed that I didn't. I was planning on having a section of the notes where I marked down who does the weirdest thing with the money, and nobody really does a weird thing with the money in this one.
It takes a little while to get there.
So round one is turkey dinner. Most rounds in Cutthroat Kitchen are 30 minutes of cook time. That's a pretty brutal one. Turkey dinner in 30 minutes is pretty brutal.
Here's another thing, too. This is getting ahead a little bit, but all four of these look like something I would want to eat, except for possibly Frankie's.
Yes, I agree. So the first thing that happens at the start of every round is as soon as Alton tells you what you're making, they have 1 minute to shop in a fully stocked pantry that is way far across from where they're standing just to make it harder on them.
To make them run and to get another set of... using the pantry theme.
The pantry is famously where people fuck themselves the most often. Like you can really, really shoot yourself in the foot in the first minute, basically.
Yes.
As someone who has done the ducks. Go ahead. Sorry, Gary, I talked over you.
I was going to say sometimes the sabotages can speak to the way you fuck up, and that's one of the most fun things when somebody purposely gets a sabotage to make up for a weakness in their pantry shop. I love it. I love that strategy.
As someone who has done a Cutthroat Kitchen ripoff show twice, I will say that just being suddenly asked to list ingredients for a dish, especially if you're only like semi-familiar with a dish, is a real panic attack moment.
I believe it. Yeah.
Yeah, you were there. I was there. I listened to me have a panic attack.
I proctored it. How many panic attacks am I responsible for you having total?
Probably 15.
15? That's not so bad.
Given how often I have, usually, I should clarify, anxiety attacks, not panic attacks, usually.
Yeah.
They don't feel like heart attacks. They feel like my brain freezing up with anxiety.
I didn't do the heart attack one.
No, that was all me.
Yeah. So at least give me that. In the pantry, usually this is just people listing emphatically things you need for the dish.
Yeah.
Like we cut away to the camera and they're like, turkey dinner. You're going to need turkey. You're going to need gravy. You're going to need potatoes. They don't quite do that in this one yet. It's the first episode. So they show more of them actually shopping, including Ilka falls down and spills everything like Sonic.
Yeah. Yeah. Like she got all her rings popped out.
All of her rings popped out. Everything in her bag. And they eventually get out, you know, Alton Brown closes the door. And this is what, you know, won me over Stark. He's like, people don't get butter or chicken stock. How are you going to make gravy, you idiots?
Yeah. And I was like, yes. The talking heads in the show are big boons to the editors to the point that I think sometimes the editors tell them to say things.
I think almost all the time. Editors tell them to say things. So then we get our sabotages. They come down on a cool dumbwaiter.
Mm-hmm. This is really cool. Thank you for noting that it's cool.
It's really cool. And then Alton Brown, this is where the Alton Brownness of this, where I do think he legitimately wants to see people fail and suffer.
Yes.
Comes through.
And that's really necessary.
Pleasing. Yes. If he was, as we talked about with the reboot, which we'll get to in season two of this pivot.
Yeah.
The
Fulton Brown, Fulton Brown. I won't say his real name because it annoys the fuck out of me.
Fulton Brown is real good.
Yeah.
Fulton Brown. The YA novel sweeping the nation. If the person's rooting for them, it fucking sucks.
Yeah.
If the judge is rooting for them, it fucking sucks. This is an antagonistic show.
Except Jet. I don't mind when Jet roots for him. Jet hates
Jet. Jet is the most friendly.
Uh-huh.
Of them. Did you say I hate Jet?
No. I like Jet.
Yeah, I like Jet. Jet's just fine. He's the most friendly of them. You know, but he's still not like rooting for him.
Okay.
Like he's like, this is still pretty rough. He's probably the nicest though.
All right, Gary, if we're gonna make this an hour, we have 22 minutes to get through the rest of the episode.
We can do it.
Okay.
Unless it's a two-parter.
Yeah.
Sabotage number one, basket theft. You get to take one ingredient from each chef's basket. As you mentioned, the kind of fuck ups in the pantry can play into the sabotages.
Yeah.
If people forgot stuff, somebody else can take it.
So generally sabotages fall very loosely on the show into about three categories from what I've observed. There's stuff that fucks with what you're cooking. There's stuff that fucks with how you're cooking. And there's stuff that wastes your time.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Typically, I have found that the thing most likely to send people home is stuff that fucks with what you're cooking, like ingredient sabotages.
Yeah.
I will say this one is pretty mild.
This is really mild.
Losing one ingredient is not that bad, even if they can't take their turkey.
Yep. And we get to see, so Lori buys us $7,500.
Overbids, I think.
Overbids. And takes butter from Frankie. He wanted to make that gravy.
Mm-hmm.
Stock from Stark. Makes sense. Wanted to make that gravy. And then peas from Ilka.
Terrible.
And I don't know why she took peas in the first place.
She gets the stuff she's stealing. But I don't think she uses the peas.
No.
So.
Yeah, she does it over fingerling potatoes. It's really weird. And it starts off with a little bit of like girls have to stick together, right? Nuh-uh, sister.
That's a favorite tactic.
Huge tactic. So then she takes peas. I don't know if it was to give her friend a leg up a little bit. Takes like the most inconsequential thing. But okay, it just cuts Ilka being like, I didn't even need those.
Yeah.
I just took them as chaff. You know? Hoping somebody would take them.
Then sabotage number two is a protein replacement where you lose all your turkey and have to replace it with a cooked deli turkey. Everybody treats this like it is the knell of death, and I think it's really not. This is like nothing.
When, yeah, yeah. This happens a lot in this show. Something gets replaced with a food that's already cooked and already seasoned by food scientists to be good, and it works out.
Yeah.
For them. Frankie is very scared of this, as foreshadowed, meaning he's going to get it.
Yeah.
Bought by Alka for $6,400, given to Frankie.
Also an overbid.
Yep. Sabotage 3, the knife swap. You lose all your hand tools, and you get this Swiss Army knife.
This one I think is actually genuinely quite rough.
This one is rough, even though people do good work with it.
Yeah.
The, Lori gets it and she makes it work.
Like 90% of chefs are knife fetishists, and everyone gets very, very angry when they lose their knives.
When people talk about that, that is one of my favorite things that happens when they cut to somebody and they say, if you take my knife, it's like taking my children.
Yeah.
Yeah. So bought by Olka, $9,000. She spent a lot of money.
Olka just blew $15,400 of her $25,000.
Yep.
This one I think is about, I would have bet pretty heavy on this one, or bid pretty heavy on this one, but
I would have would not have gone. Yeah. I would not have gone 9,000 on it. I think that whenever something like this happens, my first thought is make something with small bits.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like chunks, and then just call it rustic. Like, I feel like you could still make this taste good.
I mean, breaking down a turkey, because they are getting like whole turkeys that they're having to break down.
Yeah. I would just cut off little bits. Like, it'd be like turkey bits, but I'd get yelled at for not having enough food.
Yeah. So. And the knife is dull. So
the knife is super dull. The other thing I always think about is contestants not using the deep fryer enough.
Yes. Like, that is true.
When you're fucked, just throw in the deep fryer. It'll be good. This is given to Lori, and Lori here says an insane thing.
She says two insane things. One of them she says, because they cut back and forth between the talking heads. So first she says, ninja, please. Lori is black.
Yes.
So.
And.
Okay.
And Olka is the ninja, little chef ninja. Yeah.
And then she says, in the room, when given this, you go ahead and deliver it, please, Gary.
She says, I came from a long line of heavyset women who killed chickens with their bare hands and cooked them for dinner. And everyone reacts. What an odd thing to say.
Yeah. You get a good Alton Brown reaction cut. You get a really good Stark cut.
Yeah. Everyone's just, what the fuck was that?
Yeah.
Yeah. It's real good. And they cook. They get the traditional, somebody's complaining about not having something. Somebody else offers it to them.
And then goes, cool psych. Joke.
Psych. Not. And then we get a fourth sabotage in both of the games in this one, which is surprising. They kind of ease up on that.
Yeah.
On the mid-round sabotage.
Mid-round sabotage. These tend to go for cheaper because everyone's distracted.
Yeah. And because people are halfway through cooking their dish.
Yeah.
You know, so like it doesn't hurt them as much. This is where Frankie says, I looked over at Alka and I knew that the pigeon was going to fall.
I watched this episode twice and did not clock that line the first time.
Yeah.
But it's insane.
Yeah. Yes. And it's just the idea of giving. Stark says something like, you can take a slow boat to China in the time it takes to heat up one of these.
Yep.
Which is like something you also have canned. Kind of a canned statement here.
Yeah. That pigeon was going to fall.
That pigeon was going to fall. Lord, oh Lord. Sold to Frankie, $2,100. And we get a sincere, that just happened.
That's from Stark, I believe.
Yeah, Stark does it. Demerit. And the 2013, though. You have to understand.
Yeah, it was in the water. This is a new Gary Butterfield TV podcast. We do have to remark at least once that was in the water.
When Alton starts throwing down the Arsler, because it's 2013.
It was in the water.
It was in the water. And he's just describing food. Round one judging.
I wish I was felt comfortable saying the Arsler, because saying that turkey was is,
I know, it's kind of it's, funny. I'm not.
It's immature
it,
in my head, like, but it is funny as a phrase.
It's absurd. First judge, filling it out in all the right places, Antonio LaFaso.
Yeah, so for the first several seasons of Cutthroat Kitchen, there are three judges who rotate. One thing I in hindsight, I really love about this show is that there's only one judge per competition. I don't like the panels.
Yes. No, the panel sucks. Another thing about this show is they are judged per dish, not for their achievement, you know, their performance across the entire thing, which is a problem with Chopped, where you get to the end, they make a really great dish, and someone's like, yeah, but you fucked up the turkey in the first round.
Yeah, who cares?
Sucks. Yeah, who cares? It's round three now. Grow up.
They always make a big deal about the fact that the judges don't know what the sabotages were and don't care. It is just what you've managed to put on the plate.
Yep. This is before we say the, does it look good? Does it taste good? Does it remind me of a turkey dinner?
Which is mostly a Majumdar thing. Majumdar pushes that one harder than the other two do.
Especially the third point. He really wants to be reminded of food that he's eating while he's eating it.
Oh, he is. Part of the reason I have negative feelings about him sometimes is he hits that too hard. And then eliminates really good looking food because it doesn't quite remind him of the thing.
He's a fucking insane man.
Some of his judgments are crazy. But Antonio LaFossa.
Instagram is him wearing 10 different hats at once. A lot of it. It's just him wearing a stack of hats. He's fucking playing one man hatress. Alexei Pajitnov's one man hatress. It's incredible.
Antonio. So there's a TV tropes that is nice, mean, and in between. Antonio LaFossa is the in between there.
Yeah. She is harsh, but fair.
Mm hmm.
And
like you would want your mommy wife to be.
Yeah. And because you want a dom who is going to set rules and stick with them for believability. You know, if you have a woman yelling at you and she's like, you know, worship this, lick that. And then all of a sudden it was like, you've been bad. You worshiped the wrong thing. It's like, you fucking told me to. I'm out of the scene. You know, you have to be consistent.
And I will say, while
Antonio LaFossa would be consistent.
While we're making jokes about Gary's fetishization of this woman he's never met.
Just attraction.
The show does lean into that. Like when they do like costume episodes, they are always very careful to put her in some sort of fairly sexualized costume that is kind of a little too much for this stupid cooking show, I will say.
Yeah,
but
they know what they're doing.
Yeah, they know what they're doing.
They responded to my letters. Antonio LaFossa, cookbook author. She does own the Black Market Liquor Bar. Maybe she didn't own it at this point.
She did. I looked it up.
Oh yeah, so they
opened in 2011. Food looks good.
Yeah, yeah, I'm sure it's great. God, to eat something. Chef Frankie. He presented something that looks pretty gross.
This makes no
fucking sense to me.
He did a pivot into like Asian fusion stuff and it looks like shit.
Why you would pivot to Asian fusion, I don't know.
Because he didn't have butter. So he couldn't make gravy. So he decided to make a fucking mascarpone pasta.
Yes, I'd make mascarpone. So it's turkey, deli turkey, roasted yam on noodles with toasted almonds and mascarpone sauce.
Like maybe we're just being dumb Philistines. This looks bad, and I think it would taste bad.
It's by far the worst looking one.
Yeah.
It looks like a dog's breakfast. Antonio LaFossa, underseasoned. This is going to be a consistent problem with Chef Frankie, but perfectly cooked turkey.
Which, of course, he didn't cook. He had the sabotage that gave him the deli turkey.
Which is engineered by food scientists that taste good.
Yeah.
You know? Makes sense. A really nice looking dish, Chef Lori.
Mm-hmm.
Makes a turkey cutlet on a brown butter caper sauce served over fingerling potatoes, a fingerling hash. We get the reaction shot. LaFossa makes a big face, like a big, you know, num 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 face, like she's trying to get a baby to eat. And that's how you can tell Lori did good.
Yeah. Chef Olka has an appealing looking plate. It's a turkey curry with Madras curry powder and green cardamom resting on a bed of yam. There's also some green apples on top, which I think is awful. Also, you can tell she's a fucking food stylist because she has like little like nuggets of stuff on the edges of the plate.
Yeah.
I don't know what those were.
Good flavors, but there is a bone. And Chef Stark called this. She was not cleaning her turkey well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, bone in, nah. Huge. And then Chef Stark made a traditional Texas Thanksgiving dinner. Don't know what that means.
It's bullshit. Bullshit to try to cover for the fact that you made a kind of boring dish that does look very tasty.
Yeah. And it looks and reminds me of a Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah. His turkey looks fucking delicious.
Yeah, really good. With a white gravy that he added the turkey leavings to later. I bet you that's really good with salt and pepper, even without chicken stock. His snow snap peas were in shell and they weren't cleaned properly. And his food was a little dry, even though it was well seasoned. The idea that he did not clean his peas, I was pretty sure he was going home.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I'm glad he didn't.
Yeah, the so who is Filaminated? That's a reference to, I think, The Amazing Race that is like locked in my head from reading Television Without Pity recaps of Amazing Race episodes 15 years ago. It is Chef Ulka. They give Antonia a really awkward line to say. There never should have been cartilage that I had to pull from my mouth.
Yep. Truer now than when it was spoken. Chef Ulka goes down the failure hallway.
Oh, yeah. I didn't really take notes on the failure hallway, but the failure hallway is very good.
I've always been a little obsessed with it. It is this beautiful, it looks like a hip coffee shop.
Mm-hmm.
It's like this brick hallway with like really, really nice industrial lights.
The lights are set to like look like torches almost. Like yeah. It's like almost by torchlight.
And sometimes they decorate this for holiday episodes as well.
Mm-hmm.
I also like when somebody walks down the failure hallway and they're really upset about it.
Yeah.
One of the things that happens, it's one of my favorite things, is when the judge says like, this is underseasoned, and the chef just goes, I disagree.
Yeah.
Fucking love it. Round two, French toast, 20 minutes.
So this is, I will say, almost every round in Cutthroat Kitchen is 30 minutes. When the dishes are simpler, they usually just make the sabotages worse and more time-wasty. Yes. 20 minutes is fucking brutal.
Super brutal. We do get to hear Chef Stark say, my two passions are my mohawk and French toast.
Yeah.
And he does a real big yes when he hears French toast. So I kind of believed him.
Yeah, it's still, I just love, he is the most, I'm here to build a brand out of everybody.
Yeah.
Did you notice my mohawk?
Yeah, he's really into the mohawk, and he's not the first chef to do that.
Oh, he is. Show.
You're right. Oh, you did research as well. Alden hits people with the door. He closes it on them. Later, he will take an ingredient when he does this, which I like.
So they weren't out of time. He was just kind of bumping them with the door because they were coming out in like the last 4 seconds. He was just very anxious to hit them with the door.
Yeah, he wanted somebody to get hurt. It'd been a minute.
Yeah. We're coming up on the single best moment of the entire episode.
Yep. Very good. So Alden does the intro to this sabotage here.
For no reason and never repeated, as far as I can remember.
Yes. He does it as a rap.
Do you want to do it or should I do it?
You should do it.
Forbid today. That's all. That's all. He just does it as, our first item up, forbid today.
He just does it. Grandmaster Flash stuck in his head or something.
Yeah.
Like, he's Alton Brown. He's here to sabotage in a major way. The sabotage, all the eggs get replaced with powdered eggs and all the dairy with powdered milk.
So throughout, Frankie has been tossing out really high opening bids, which I guess is a strategy, but sometimes it fucks you over. But he opens with $7,000 for this, which is nutty. That's more than a quarter of your money. This sabotage is not that bad.
Nope. He says French toast is all about texture. And I was like, yeah, kinda. You know, but there's a lot of things French toast is about. I think you can make this work.
Like, this is one of those things where, like, powdered eggs and powdered milk are not amazing, but they are there. They exist because they replicate relatively well.
They do the thing. This is won by Chef Stark for $8,000, given to Chef Frankie. This is the round where Chef Stark hates Chef Frankie.
Yeah.
And he's going to send him home.
I mean, I believe because he's identified that Chef Frankie is dangerous.
Is a threat. Sabotage 2, the worst one, the bread swap.
This is the one of the nastiest things I think I've ever seen them pull.
Yeah, pretty gross. And it's interesting because you get to do it both to both your opponents. Always good value. One person has their bread replaced with burnt challah bread and one with bread crust.
Now, bread I think crust, it's pronounced challah.
Challah, thank you. Bread crust, not so bad. You can do deconstructed French toast. That's fine. She makes
giving burnt bread, that is an unusable component to my mind.
Yes.
For French toast?
French toast. He kind of makes it work. You know, he soaks it. He does the things you need to do, but it's rough.
Yeah, Chef Frankie buys this for $11,000. I think this is the one super high bid that I think absolutely tracks with how much you should spend for this one.
Yeah, even though it does put him in an awkward position for the next round.
Yeah, he gives the burnt bread to Stark and gives Lori the crusts.
Yes, and Lori is a pig in shit. She's from a history of heavyset women who took crusts.
But like, and the thing about this burnt bread thing is that the time it interacts with the shortened time in a nasty way. Because I think most people given this would just give up on that bread because it's fucking burnt. It is burnt to a crisp bread.
Yeah.
Most people, I think, would ditch the bread and come up with a substitute, but 20 minutes is not enough time to figure something out for that.
Well, you also do your sabotage after, or do your shopping before you have the sabotage, so you maybe didn't have substitute shit.
Yeah, which, of course, you should always plan for, like, have, like, five different contingency plans, but yeah, it's the first episode.
It's the first episode. Can we get through the rest of this in about, or should this be a two-parter?
No, we should. We'll get through it. We'll get through it. Okay. Maybe the episode goes about 70 minutes. Is that okay?
Yeah, that will be fine. I have a busy day, but I'm invested in the launch of this pivot.
It's an important show for us.
Third sabotage is a big bowl of ice.
This is nothing.
You have to serve a frozen component with your French toast. French toast goes with ice cream.
Yeah, like, exactly. This is just, hey, make your meal... Do a little bit of work to make your meal slightly more delicious.
Go desserty here. And Chef Stark gets this. He pays a lot of money to give it to Frankie because he's trying to get Frankie out.
But this is really just like, especially as Frankie notes, he already had the powdered ingredients he was already given are real easy to get into the ice cream machine. Like, this is such a nothing sabotage.
Yep. His next sabotage, there's another mid-round sabotage.
We're into the cooking.
Yep, they're in the cooking. $4,400, he also gives it to Frankie. And this is, you have to incorporate red wine and blue cheese into your dish. This does seem harder, and this also does seem like it might send him. So you have to have a savory French toast as well, basically.
Yeah, blue cheese is a nasty ingredient to have to throw in, especially French when he was already making a sweet French toast.
Yeah, you know, a frozen element with blue cheese. Give me a fucking break. What is this, salt and straw? You know?
Oh, you got him.
Yeah. Get their fucking asses. Frankie makes a sweet and savory anise.
Yeah, it took me forever to look up what this fucking thing is. It is a... It's just called an I-N-I-S. Then I guess anise is the plural, but this is like a Sicilian kind of French toast kind of nugget thing.
Did you notice the word he was saying when he was just letting people have the bid?
It's Italian for go ahead.
Okay. Govo. Yeah.
Adovo, I think is it.
Adovo. Adobo. Makes a blue cheese and cabernet glaze on one, and then a mascarpone banana raspberry gelato with a Foster sauce on the other.
That one, that thing looks so fucking good.
Looks really, really good. He's La Fossa, has it and makes the poopiest face I've ever seen.
Yeah, she likes his sweet one because obviously it looks insanely delicious.
And the other one is just French toast with a big chunk of blue cheese and wine on it.
Put a big clump of blue cheese and then maybe cooked wine for like a minute and then poured it on top of it.
Mmm.
She literally says, I couldn't get the taste out of my mouth fast enough.
Yeah, very damning. She's going to be brutal during this round. Lori does a savory French toast, basically a bread salad. This is not a French toast at all. It doesn't have remind you of a French toast in this first episode.
Yeah, she didn't have, she didn't get dairy in the pantry.
Yeah.
Dope. This I would have sent home, I think.
Yeah. No, because it's nothing like French toast. I would have sent this the shit home. It's an arugula salad with little bits of bread in it. With a warm tomato compote, La Fossa says not only does this remind her of a bread salad, but it's flat in one note.
Yeah, one made me angry. She basically did is she took her bread crusts and fried them in a pan.
Yes.
To like make kind of like a little patty out of them. In no way, shape, or form does it resemble French toast.
No, it's real weird. Stark makes a sunny summer French toast. With fresh summer peaches on the side and a fresh strawberry lemon sauce.
He says fresh twice.
French toast has a sunny side egg on it. Lavazza says another thing that's incredibly damning, which is the first thing out of her mouth. The thing I really liked about this is the color of the sauce.
That's really brutal. It is a beautiful plate. Brutal. It's a beautiful plate.
Oh, but he's the best at plating by far.
Yeah.
And the two good things she says is beautiful sauce and the egg was cooked well.
Yeah.
And then she kind of runs out of like actionable critiques.
Like she had to saw. You can watch her have to saw through the burnt bread. Yes.
But that wasn't. She doesn't even really mention that. She just says it wasn't working.
Yeah, she calls it
confusing. And she's confused by the fruit. And Chef Stark says, what's confusing about this, Chef Lafosso? And, like, kind of fair.
Yeah, he says that in his exit interview, I think. But
he
is genuinely quite mad.
Yeah, because it's a real swerve. It seems like Laurie was going to go home. You can have fresh fruit next to fucking, French toast.
Maybe it's because he didn't cook the fruit into anything. But he did make that jam, that very pretty jam.
Yeah. So he gets sent home. Round three, a lobster roll in any side here. And this is where we find out Lori does not like killing lobsters live, which I like because I also don't like that.
Traditionally, round three is a dessert round, but they kind of mix it up with round two having a potentially sweet thing.
Well, I think it's just the first episode. They're still finding their rhythms.
They're finding their rhythms, Gary. Gary, I know we're looking at the clock. I don't want us to rush this lobster roll. I want us to really give it some time and some energy.
We're gonna do our best.
Whatever we do for the next fucking episode, we'll do it short and give it.
Yeah, we'll do it shorter. Yeah. I just have a busy day. I'm not trying to be a dick. I have to go get my blood tested.
Oh, for what?
Medical stuff.
Do you want to say on the podcast what you're getting your blood tested for? Human?
Kidney function.
Oh. I just realized I put on my sweater up backwards.
Oh.
Everything I've said on this episode is invalidated because a dumb 6-year-old with a sweater on backwards said it.
Do you have mittens tied to your sleeves, Junior?
No, I lost them.
Yeah, well, you got to get those things pinned to your sleeve.
I chewed through the pin.
Oh, that's a big mistake. What's an update on your chew toy? Speaking of culinary.
I've broken the chew toy.
Did you really?
I chewed through it, yeah.
Oh, man.
And now I'm getting little bits of, like, I'm coughing every now and then because I got little bits of silicone going into my, because it's...
Get the macroplastics in your lungs.
Yeah. I'm pretty embarrassed that I managed to chew through it in about a week.
Pretty quick. Yeah.
I might need professional help. Anyway. So yeah, this is lobster roll and a side, live lobsters.
Yep.
Lori
drops it in and then puts the lid so she can't see it, which I relate to.
Also foreshadowing when she's in the, pantry, she grabs two lobsters and then gets scared and drops one. And that is what fucks her up later. So
again, incredibly relatable though.
Yeah, no, I wouldn't want to kill a lobster on TV.
I don't want to touch a lobster on live TV. She says she puts a lid on so she doesn't have to see it while it goes up to heaven.
Yeah.
All lobsters go to heaven.
So one of the quirks about round three that I know you are not as wild about, I'm not crazy about either, is that the sabotages happen during the cook.
Yes. And it doesn't harm it too much for me. I just don't think it adds very much. It's always presented as if it's going to be a real twist.
And in this case, the first one, it can fuck you up, as with this first one, which is you have to, sabotage number one is make your bread from scratch.
Yeah.
Pretty brutal.
Pretty brutal. Chef Lori wins this, spends most of the rest of her money, not all of it, but she's definitely doing worse on money.
Yeah.
Here. Or doing better at first and then worse.
Coming into this round, Frankie only had $11,900 left, and Lori had quite a bit more. I think did she come in with?
She has 6,000 by the end of the round.
But she came in with I'm going back and checking who bought what. She bought the basket theft at the start for $7,500 and hasn't spent money since.
Yeah. So she actually comes in with a big advantage here. I was mistaken. Yeah. She also wins the second one, the hand tool harvest, which that sounds scary. That's folklore. sounding to me. That's an Arkham Horror scenario. This is, you lose all your hand tools. What a hand tool is kind of up for grab here. Because you still,
I mean, it's anything with a handle, really.
Yeah, you still get to use a rolling pin and stuff.
Yeah.
So he has to, he's like, oh shit, I have to get the lobster out. You know,
that's the most interesting moment of that. Again, Frankie is a good cook who has been in the kitchen for a long time.
Yes.
For his knife, he immediately just grabs a food processor blade and uses it.
Yep. To cut jicama. Like, does a good job.
Yeah. And just grabs a spaghetti strainer to get his lobster out of the water.
Out of the pot. He really fucks up on bread. The bread does not come together. He kind of makes a flat bread. He does, you know, for making bread in a really short time, sure.
30 minutes to make bread while cooking other stuff. That is an incredibly nasty sabotage. That one goes for 8,500 and rightly so.
Yeah, it's really nasty. I'm not saying he should have done it better, but this is where he's clearly struggling with it.
He makes a real ugly flat bread.
Really ugly flat bread that looks undercooked. And he didn't put enough egg in it. And we go into, so he's made that, Lori, however, has made a lobster roll with a tiny, tiny amount of lobster in it.
Yeah.
It's a baby lobster roll.
You can tell, that they are feeling our same crunch, insofar as they jump from like 20 minutes to 1 minute left on the clock.
Yes.
This show does not spend that much time in the cooking rounds if the sabotages aren't that TV friendly.
Yeah. And they actually try to make the sabotages more TV friendly as the show goes on.
Yeah.
Like, again, you get to see them learn. One of the things I love about watching this show from the beginning and doing this examination of it is being able to see it learn and grow.
It's insane that made this over 4 years. That is.
Yeah. Huge advancements. 4 years. Like, a 4-year-old kid doesn't learn as much as this show learned.
That's right, you Jeff. Know? And that's why you died.
Yeah. That's why you fucked up. So we get to the judging here. Frankie has made a Baja-style grilled lobster and roasted bell pepper panini on a jicama lobster slaw on the side. Doesn't look very good.
It's really roughly plated. The bread looks like absolute shit. That being said, the lobster looks good.
Yeah.
He grilled his lobster, and he's got a lot of it.
Yep. Lori made a petite lobster roll, but she could not find a side, so she just grabbed radishes, which is insane, and makes a radish and cilantro salad, which is just radish and cilantro.
And while she has a nice, good lobster she barely has enough lobster filling to put in there.
Yes. They keep mentioning, you know, lobster rolls are about abundance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, which I didn't really realize, but apparently it's a real cornucopia food.
And this is the first time in the show's history, but certainly not the last, where Antonia LaFossa complains about not being given enough food.
That's my girl. There's a lot of bread to lobster. So they're going to do that. She says, you now get to pick the one who is not continuing. Shall you not join the forest cult, young hunter? It's very Alva.
That's what people always, I was looking on the forums about this episode and people were like, that ending elimination was very Alva coded.
And people were like, oh, from the Forest Covenant? And they're like, yeah,
mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah. No shit, dude. Obviously don't say obvious things.
Yeah. So this really seems like I was not expecting Frankie to win. Bad bread, like good looking lobster, but her lobster looked fine. There just wasn't very much of it.
Yeah. But Frankie say relax.
Frankie does say relax. The editor was doing this to fake me out. They always do this. It's reality TV. Nothing's fucking real. So they made it look like he was going to, you know, he was in more trouble than he was.
Mm-hmm.
She's like, it's under seasoned. It doesn't taste like the bottom of the sea, you know, like it's supposed to. But yeah. Frankie wins.
Yeah. By which Lori is eliminated. And then they're like, oh, and I guess Frankie wins.
Yeah. Shit. We should do that the opposite. Lori is not happy about this. Goes down the failure hallway. Doesn't look like she's flipping tables or anything.
Yeah.
But clearly not happy.
Less mad than Stark was.
And Chef Frankie won $11,900, which Alton Brown says, I've never seen anyone who deserves this more than you.
I guess just generally in life.
Yeah, it's an odd thing for him to say.
In the first episode. I mean, Frankie dealt with a lot of sabotages.
He did. And I guess it's true that he's never seen anyone who deserves it more.
It's true.
Because he's never seen it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It feels like they asked to get the hug with Antonia twice, because mm-hmm. there's two different weird hugs with Frankie and Antonia.
Mm-hmm. The dream. And everyone does a little dance and does a little post-game thing. There's little things they do. He gets down on one knee and kind of offers it up like the Lion King.
It's weird. It's a weird gesture. It's like, yeah. He's like doing like an Elvis thing, I think.
Yes, but with money in one hand. Like he's offering it to the sky. And then he says, this really long sentence, there are some days where you think about what you did and you regret it and you wish you'd done something different. But today isn't like that. I partied like a rock star.
Yeah. Referencing, of course, when he didn't watch his son Jeff while he was out by the pool.
Yes. He has a lot of regrets around that. As well he should.
Yeah.
And that's the first episode of Cutthroat Kvetchin, the pivot. Thank you for your patience.
Yeah, thank you. No, don't thank you. Are you mean because it took us so long to do
yeah,
this
to get
instead
to the pivot.
Of we're just doing the fucking monster blitz and we were yeah. so fucking God, can we say now how fucking sick of it we were?
It took a really long time and it was an hour of improv with no prompt for the last like 30 episodes.
Yeah.
Like, just the name. Yeah, they walk towards you, motherfucker. If you like this pivot, let us know. Leave us a rating or review and join us on Patreon.
Yeah, patreon.com/duckfeedtv. I guess should we leave a review for the other show? Should
yeah,
we read
why
a review?
Not?
Yeah.
It's the same RSS feed. As long it's as it's 5 stars, I don't care what you review.
Yeah. So I might not have one. Oh yeah, there we go. This one left on Apple Podcasts by Jackie Joe 237. Sorry, everyone. I am the one who asked these two goobers to cover the monsters. You can check the records. I did not mean to extend the show for over a year. Again, I am very sorry. I greatly overestimated Gary's attention span. Extra sorry is extended to fans of the Universe Beyond Friends expansion, whatever they called it when Joey gained the dredge ability. Malbolgia or something. IDK, you guys laugh at anything. It seems like Tim Robinson.
I like that review up until the end where it got really mean.
Yeah.
You laugh at anything is a real mean thing to say.
Yeah.
What is our famous sign-off for this show?
God, Gary, I forgot to make up one. What is it? What? God. I had all that intro stuff, and I didn't think of a good sign-off. Shit.
Yeah. It's okay. Like, the last show, it took us a while to get there. You know, we get to learn and grow over 4 years as well.
How about, and now, listener, you have been chopped.
That's pretty good.
It's not.
No, it's appropriate. It reminds me of the show we're watching for this. Oh, shit. No, it doesn't.